Hello, you are very welcome to what is a first for me. I'm delighted to welcome you to News Talk presenting Menopause Matters with MenoActive from Revive Active, who are supporting women throughout the menopause and indeed after the menopause. I'm also delighted to have two wonderful guests here today to discuss a no-holds-barred approach to the menopause. There is nothing that we will, there's nowhere we won't go with this today. We want to get to the heart of what women are experiencing and indeed what can be done about it. I'm joined by Dr. Fiona Barry. Fiona, you were very involved in working with Revive Active to develop MenoActive, the supplement for women who are experiencing symptoms of the menopause, and that helps them with lots of different aspects of the menopause, not just symptoms, but other things that they might be deficient in. And indeed, Dr. Loretta Dignam from the Menopause Hub, who is an expert and runs one of Ireland's only specialist clinics on the menopause. You're both very welcome. We're delighted to have you here at News Talk. And we're delighted actually to be speaking about the menopause today, because for so long, I think it's fair to say, and I'll come to you first, Fiona, the menopause was not discussed. It was hush-hush. It was under the carpet. It was, you know, women were embarrassed if they flushed in public. They barely mentioned it to their friends. But that, thankfully, is changing now. And I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. It's been brilliant to hear the conversation opening up over the last number of months, particularly on media, where finally I think women are coming out and owning it. It's a huge part of a woman's life. We are, with our life expectancy the way it is now, we potentially have a good one third of our lives in the menopause. So it's definitely something that we need to be educating ourselves on. And I think, for me anyway, I think knowledge is power.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I do love the conversations that have been having. And obviously they're occurring in the media, but I think women themselves are opening up and talking about it to each other as well, which is a really good thing. Loretta, let me ask you, because one of the questions I think, and you can as well, by the way, this is going out on Facebook and social media, but you can actually send in questions to us. But Loretta, one of the things that women always seem to ask is, what is the menopause and how do you know if you're in it?
Now, I need to correct you on something there, Ciara. I'm not a doctor. I set up the clinic myself, born out of my own experience of going through menopause. But I do have a team of specialists who work with us. Some are gynecologists by background. Some are GP by background. And we also have a psychologist. We have a dietitian and nutritionist. We have a women's health physio. And we have an acupuncturist. And so we're an evidence-based clinic.
My apologies.
No.
Because I've spoken to you before, you always seem so expert.
No, I just wouldn't like people to think that I am, and therefore I'm giving misleading information. That's the reason only. But I obviously have my personal experience, and I have what I hear and see kind of every day. But yeah, I mean, the menopause is... officially, you're what's called postmenopausal when you've had no periods for 12 months. And prior to that, you're effectively perimenopausal, which means you can be having periods, they may be erratic and so on, but you're not technically postmenopausal until you've had 12 months after your last period. And in fact, you don't know it's been 12 months, because for some women, it can be 3 or 4 months, and then they might have another period, and it could be another 4 or 5 months, and it could be another period. But really what's happening is that, you know, we're born with a finite number of eggs in our ovaries. And when these eggs are, you know, some of them shrivel up and die during the course of our lives, some are even shriveled up and dead before we're born. And as we go through life, through menstruation and everything, more of these eggs are shed. And then the eggs are fairly depleted. And it sort of means that we're past our stage of fertility. And at the same time, what's also happening is there's a decline in our hormones, in particular estrogen. And that's really, if you'd like to consider the oil of the engine of your car, if you were to consider yourself a car, and really it's the oil running out. And so when the oil starts to run out and decline, lots of things start to go wrong, because the female body is either touched by every cell is touched by estrogen or has a conversation with estrogen. So it's a very fundamental hormone for our bodies. But I know the real doctor in the room might have something more to add there.
Let's come over to you, Fiona. Tell me this, like, so the oil in the that fuels the body and every cell having a conversation with estrogen, that sounds dramatic and actually a little bit frightening for women maybe who haven't gone into it yet or are on the cusp of it. What kind of symptoms? You know, I was asking Loretta there, and I'll ask you, how do women know that they're going into? What kind of symptoms do they start to experience?
Well, I suppose it's important to differentiate the different stages of menopause. And I think it's no wonder women are confused, because even the names that we use for, like, we've perimenopause. Peri means around, as opposed to premenopause. That would probably be a better term. That's the transition from obviously your fertile years to your infertile years. Menopause is realistically only one day. It's the 1 year anniversary of your last menstrual cycle. So, and I think most people, when they say they're menopausal, they're really terming it, is what they mean is postmenopause. So in other words, they've gone through, they've had that anniversary, and they're out the other side. So with perimenopause, we can divide it into two stages, early and late. So early is where you still obviously have your menstrual cycle, but what's happening is you're not maybe ovulating for every cycle. So your progesterone levels then drop because you need to ovulate for your progesterone. And so you can end up in a state of kind of estrogen dominance because you don't have the balancing effect of the progesterone. So therefore, you might end up with things like, usually the very first thing would be insomnia, where you have sleep disturbance. You might have weight gain, things like bloating, water retention, as I said. Also, there would be, you could have things like, sorry, now I've lost my train of thought.
But you know,
that would be for the estrogen dominance. And then when you get into late perimenopause, you have a case of where you still have menstrual cycles, your hormone levels are still fluctuating, and that's what women can find very difficult. In fact, that's what happens, is our brain can't cope with the fluctuations, and therefore then you end up with low estrogen levels at that stage, and then you end up with things like maybe loss of libido, vaginal dryness, anxiety, but the anxiety might have even crept in when you have the estrogen dominance. And then when we go into menopause, then everything stabilizes and you have your new lower levels of hormones. And for a lot of women then, that's a much better time for them.
Yeah, but it can take an awful long time, Loretta, isn't that right, for those hormones to stabilise? Like, women, we're talking about it, and it sounds nice, well, menopause is the anniversary of your period stopping, basically. That sounds like, well, that takes about a year. It doesn't, though. I mean, that would be great. Women talk about having, you know, not just 2 or 3 years, sometimes a decade of premenopausal, perimenopausal and postmenopausal symptoms, don't they?
Absolutely.
And so it is a, you know, it's not just a change, it's a stage of life. Is that fair? Is that fair to say, Loretta?
Yeah, it's definitely a phase of life. And the average age of perimenopause is 45. So it's not an old woman's thing that's, you know, happening to older women. The average age of menopause is 51. So, and the average length of time is 7.4 years between peri and postmenopause.
Aye, aye, aye.
So that's quite a long time. Now, you know, if you take the data sort of globally, and in Ireland says that they're, you know, they're up to about 40 different symptoms. And most people only know of the hot flushes and maybe the loss of libido and maybe anger or something, and night sweats. And that's the end of the periods. That's about what all most people know. And in reality, there's lots more symptoms that affect you from a physiological perspective, a psychological perspective, and a what they call genitourinary perspective. And I can come back to that. So there's a myriad of symptoms, and no two women are the same. No two women will go through the process in the same way. So 80% of women have symptoms. 50% have moderate to severe, and about 25% would have severe symptoms. So there's the 20% that always say, oh, I flew through menopause. Not a bother.
Which is great for them, but they are the minority.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's the 80% then who are going through it. And some women might be only a couple of years or a year or a short amount of time. But the average, as I said, is 7.4 years, which means there's some women that come to our clinic and they're in their 70s. And they're still experiencing hot flushes, vaginal dryness and some other things. And it also can happen much earlier. There's about 1% of women who would be what they call premature menopause. And we've got in our clinic about, I think it's about two young women who are in their early, they're in their 20s, and they went into premature menopause in their teens. So, you know, it can be a long process for women. And when I look back to my 40s, and I was perimenopausal. I hadn't even heard the word. I knew nothing about the symptoms.
Did you just find, Loretta, you were having all these experiences and these symptoms and these feelings, and you barely knew that it was menopause? Like, because I do think that women were in the dark about a lot of this stuff for a very long time.
Absolutely. And I think it's the fact, I suppose, we tend to attribute our sex hormones as just having an effect on our reproductive system. Whereas, as Loretta said earlier, is that we have receptors for estrogen and for other sex hormones everywhere in our body, our brain, our skin, our hair, everywhere. And I think what I find in clinic for myself is that a lot of women come and they haven't had a change in their menstrual cycle, so they never attribute what's going on with them.
So they think this isn't the menopause.
Exactly. So, and they are presenting with anxiety, sleep disturbance, joint aches and pains. That's huge. And they're kind of thinking, what's wrong with me?
Okay. There are loads of people, and if you have just joined us, we are talking about the menopause, and we're talking about all aspects of the menopause, the emotional, the psychological, the physical, the sexual, all of it. And what, but I think some of this is alarming, right? Because you're talking about having symptoms for 7 years, up into the 70s, and it's affecting every bit of us. Okay, we need to think about what we can do. Now, I'm going to come to you first, Fiona. There are lots of things. First of all, many women will say, well, I'll see how it goes. I'm not going to take anything at all unless I need to. But we've already established that 80% of people have symptoms, only 20% of people don't. But equally then, within those who are having symptoms, a lot of them will go, well, I won't take HRT unless I need it. So supposing you're looking at this now and you're thinking, this is me, I'm having the sleep disturbance, I am anxious, I'm flying off the handle, I'm crying, I remind myself of my moods are like when I was a teenager, but I'm stiff, I make some pains, I have no interest in sex, I've all that. What's the first thing they do? Who do they go and speak to? And what can they take if they don't want to immediately go on hormones or that kind of thing?
I mean, obviously, you'd always advise that somebody goes to their healthcare professional, they go to their GP and they discuss it. That's really important. And it's fantastic to see that finally that there are specialists that are popping up that are interested in this, because it's been so badly underserved. I think women are so badly underserved when it comes to this phase of their life. You know, and it's just brilliant to see that that's changing now. When it comes to natural products, obviously, this is why we decided with Revive Active to formulate MenoActive. And it was always with the view to supporting every system in the woman's body. So, you know, as we said, your hormones affect your cardiovascular system, your nervous system, your muscular system, every system in your body. So when we formulated Revive Active, we put ingredients in that would support every system in the body.
Okay, so you know, and I know there are other supplements out there, but specifically tell us about MenoActive. You know, it's made by Revive Active, which people will know because they make lots of different supplements, you know, for the over 55s, for joint pains, for, you know, they're well known in Ireland. I think they sell them in all the pharmacies and all that kind of stuff. So tell me a little bit about what's in it and why these are the things that people need.
Well, what we did is there's 30 active ingredients in it. We have a number of vitamins and minerals. There's also some probiotics in it. There's also digestive enzymes. We also have 3 botanicals in it, and we also have DHA. So rather than giving a shopping list of what the things do, if I can say, so say when it comes to cognitive function, we have DHA. 60% of our brain is made of fat. DHA is omega-3, so therefore we're supporting cognitive function with that. We have, say, a lot of the B vitamins, so a lot of women will suffer with things like fatigue and tiredness, so that will support that.
And helps with mood and stuff as well.
And helps with mood. And obviously our digestive system, it changes our metabolism, slows down, and we need some support with that. So we have included the probiotics and we've included the digestive enzymes.
So you're kind of hitting all bases. And just briefly for people who are tuning in, tell them a little bit about your background, how it is that you came to be involved in all of this, because this is an area of specialty for you.
Yeah, my background is in biomedicine and I have a PhD in pharmacology. And then I kind of did a career reversal, I suppose, to some extent. And I went and I practiced, I did a licentiate in Chinese medicine. So I run 2 holistic clinics for women's healthcare clinics in Cork. So I integrate the 2 medicines together. So I join my 2 backgrounds. So yes, I got involved with Revive about 2 years ago now. Dahi asked me to come on board and asked me, would I be part of their new product development team?
Okay.
So, and I wasn't the only external advisor on this product. There was actually quite a number of us. There was also Stephen Costello from SPV Healthcare, and also Shannon ABC were involved. So there was quite a group of us there.
Okay. And so this is a product you can obviously take, and it will hit a lot of different bases, and it will have effect on those things. But there is something I always found when I was working as a GP. In taking action, if you go and see somebody and you take something, that the effect is sort of synergistic, if you like. It isn't just about what the product does. It's the fact that you're kind of going, maybe I'm not out of control in this situation. Maybe I have an ability to help myself. So I think there's something quite empowering about actually taking action, going to see a healthcare professional, maybe starting on supplements and stuff like that anyway.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the whole idea is I think we have a lot of control over this as long as we know what we're kind of facing into. And that's why education really is key. You know, it's so important that you do educate yourself. And, you know, one of the things that struck me as we were, and again, it was something Loretta said, is, you know, this doesn't happen very late in life. The fact that we're having kids later in life, we're having kids into our late 30s. So we literally, I know for myself.
And older, yes. Loretta mentioned there that perimenopause on average starts at 45. My mum had me at 45. So she had me and probably the perimenopause at the same time. And women are doing that.
Yeah, and that's probably why, because actually at the start of perimenopause, and this is really interesting, and women, I really think you should be taking note of this and taking advantage of this. Our system goes into kind of overdrive, and for a lot of women, what happens is there that the time between their periods shortens, and it really is nature's way of trying to get you pregnant one last time.
Yeah.
So now it's a bit unfortunate that at the same time we're going through an androgen surge and want more sex, that a lot of our partners are going through an androgen pause and want less. But I think it's a great time for people. But I think, again, even when it happened for me, I was there going, I'm too young for this. Well, hang on a second, I've only had a child a few years ago.
That's very interesting, because people hear an awful lot of talk about, oh, you get the menopause and your libido goes through the floor. But before it goes through the floor, for some women, not for maybe every woman, but for some women, it goes through the roof.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. So early 40s. Yeah, a sexual peak for a man is around 18, for a woman it's around 40.
It's not older men and younger women that should get together. It's the other way around, really, isn't it?
It is.
We parked that for just a moment. Loretta, let me bring you back in. Now, obviously, you can take supplements whether you're on HRT or not. And indeed, some women won't be on HRT and will take supplements. But also, if you are taking supplements, you can still take HRT. For people who are taking supplements, still symptomatic, still going, this isn't enough, my sleep is still chaotic, my mood is still bad, I'm having all of that kind of global effect on me. The HRT has come a long way. Just for anyone listening, when I was first qualified as a doctor, everyone was on HRT. Then for quite a long period of time, 10 to 15 years, no one was on HRT because the evidence changed, and the evidence has swung again, and now women are re-embracing HRT. Tell us about the current trends in HRT, because it's, you know, it's patches, it's all sorts of new biosynthetic sort of things. Tell us what people are doing now and what kind of, I suppose, options are there for them.
Yeah, I'll just say, in terms of my own experience, once I became aware that I was menopausal, I would have started taking, you know, everything that was natural. I was terrified of HRT based on no information, I might add, but just the scary headlines that were somewhere there in my mind. And I also had this kind of personal concept that, you know, strong women power through, and if they power through, they won't need any assistance or help. Anyway, so I had very little knowledge, I can tell you. And so I would have tried a lot of different natural healthy things. I would have tried sage, black cohosh, Don Kai, all those different things. I tried magnets in my underwear, and I often tell a story that, you know, the only thing that happened was they're stuck in your tummy and in your underwear. And the only thing that happened is that the keychain for the trolley, you know, where you put the money in, stuck to my midriff. But nothing.
I thought you were
really
going to say you got attached to the fridge or something like a magnet.
No, I used to get the wire baskets in the shops used to attach themselves to me, you know, go boom.
Oh, God.
But, you know, I tried all these different things in the hope that, you know, I would hit on a solution. And I found because I would have used Dr. Google to look for information, and I would have found a lot of the information very conflicting. And so it was almost like paralysis nearly. Do you know what I mean? So eventually, anyway, you know, this was only going in one direction, and I really needed something else that was going to help me, which has brought me to my own original GP. But what's available now is very different than would have been available in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s even. The original HRT would have been made from pregnant mare's urine, would have been one of the leading big brands, Premarin. Yeah. And then they went through a phase of the next kind of generation were very sort of synthetic. And now the latest generation are what they call body identical, nature identical, sometimes bioidentical. And what it means is that they're made to mimic exactly the female hormone. They're not horses' hormones. They're female. They're made to mimic exactly the female hormone. And most of them, and they're what we prescribe primarily in our clinic, what our doctors prescribe. And they're usually delivered what they call transdermally.
Yeah.
So through the skin. So that's through gels, patches, creams. And for example, I'm on three different hormones. So I'm on estrogen, which I rub in as a gel into my upper arm or my inner thigh. I also have, because I still have a womb and I haven't had hysterectomy, I have to take progesterone, and that protects the lining of the womb and prevents that getting too thick and prevents, you know, you leading towards sort of endometrial cancer or anything. So I take that, and that's it's a tablet that you can take orally or insert vaginally. And I insert it vaginally because I'm a little bit sensitive to progesterone. And because I have no periods anymore, I take that every day. And that has a soporific effect. So it can help, you know, with sleep at night. So you take it. So
it's
I take it at
issue,
night.
In fairness, a lot of women, it's one of the first things they present with is they don't even know, they have noticed nothing else other than suddenly they don't sleep.
Yeah. And then the third hormone that I take, which was discovered later on, was that I needed was I take testosterone, and that's also in a cream. And so it's something that can help with libido, with kind of energy, concentration, those kind of things. So I started off on my journey with the two separate hormones, estrogen and progesterone. As I said, transdermal, they're made to mimic exactly the female hormones. Then I realized I still wasn't making the progress that I needed. And so therefore I tried testosterone, and then I have to have my bloods checked on testosterone first after 6 weeks and then twice a year to make sure that I'm not taking kind of too much.
It can be hard to get the testosterone
because
it's off label for women.
But also,
that's right.
Dare I say it as myself, a medic, because of a lack of expertise out there, even within the medical profession around this, because if you talk to lots of doctors, they don't know how to prescribe it or what way to prescribe it or how it's used. They've heard of estrogen and progesterone for the menopause. Obviously they have, but testosterone has been, it's not that recent, I suppose, a progress in terms of treatment, but it is relatively recent and it is off license. But a lot of women really benefit from it, and without it, they feel undertreated and they still don't feel normal.
Yeah.
So would you both agree with this? If you go to your doctor as a woman and you say, I'm having these symptoms, and they say, here's your patch or here's your what have you, and you're still not right, and you go back and you ask about testosterone, and they go, oh, no, I don't do that or whatever. Sometimes you have to look around, don't you, to get the right treatment for yourself, which may mean the right doctor for yourself too, because not everyone has a great expertise in this area. And I mean that in no disrespectful way.
No, absolutely. And I think actually it's time that women stepped up. I think women have to step up. You have to be your own advocate. I think gone are the days where you go into the doctor and you kind of sit a bit like that with religion too, isn't it? The priest. You go in and you hand over control. And that used to be the case. It's kind of fixed.
You're told what's
told
for you,
what's
but no, I still don't feel right.
Whereas now I think, you know, you have to be your own advocate, and you have to go in and you engage with the person. And if you're not satisfied with the, you know, the result, and you're not satisfied with the treatment or the service you're getting, it's a service. Then you move.
I remember having one patient who I was treating for the menopause, and she had quite profound symptoms. And I think we tried 4 to 5 different combinations of a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and chopping and changing and all sorts of things until we found something that she was, I'm back. And I think women will know, won't they? They'll nearly have that sense, I'm back. You know, that kind of thing, because I've been gone for a while and now I'm back. We're talking about libido. Let's talk about sex, because I think, you know, this is one of the kind of elephants in the room that maybe women aren't massively comfortable in talking about. But one of the things people notice is either, an increase in libido or a decrease in libido. But women in their 40s in particular, and also into their 50s and older too, do not want to have no sex life. I mean, you know, that the days when we were happy to be sort of old and embrace old age in some way are kind of over. Women want to still feel energetic, look well, have a sex life, and kind of prolong for absolutely as long as possible the normality and all those things. I'll come to you first, Fiona. With regard to things like sex, what are the issues for women? You've mentioned dryness, you've mentioned libido. There'll be people literally, I'm sure you're out there, there'll be people literally looking at this now going, yeah, this is the bit I want to hear about because no one talks about this. Talk to me a little bit about the problems women experience sexually during the menopause specifically.
I think you made a really good point about us wanting to have a sex life further, you know, further into our latter years, particularly the fact that we are having kids older. You know, you've young kids. I mean, you don't have time for it. You have no inclination for it. So you're getting into your 40s and your 50s. And you're thinking, great, as you said, I'm back, you know, and yeah. I wouldn't mind a bit of the other because the kids now can take care of themselves. Women, I find still, and Loretta might have the same experience, struggle to talk about sex. I mean, I treat a lot of fertility clients as well. And when I kind of say, so have you tried? Have you had sex? And they'd say, they can't even say the word sex. And
if you can't talk about it, then you can't say what the problem is. And if you can't say what the problem is, how do you get any help for the problem?
Absolutely. So, you know, women still kind of, I think, nearly flinch at when you say the word vagina or vulva or, you know, any of the
all the euphemisms down below.
Yes. OK, below the
under
waist.
Under the table? Where are we talking about?
Yeah, and for sex, I often get, yeah, well, we did try or we did do it. And I'm going, you mean you had sex, you know?
What did you do?
Exactly. Vaginal dryness, UTIs, recurrent UTIs would be a big thing.
Yeah. Also, and you can get post-coital UTIs. So sex can actually make the UTIs worse, and that puts people off, even if they have a good libido. They're like, oh, it's not worth it. But there are ways of working around these things.
Absolutely. And vaginal atrophy would be another thing. And urinary incontinence. So, and that's another thing that really women just do not want to go there. They do not want. And I'm kind of, you just explain and say, look, your estrogen, when you've got good estrogen levels, it supplements your collagen and that keeps everything lovely and elastic. When you lose your estrogen, that goes. So you can actually get gels. I think I'm correct in that, Loretta, aren't I? Vaginal gels.
Vaginal tablets. There's lots of locally applicable estrogens.
Yeah.
But also systemic HRT will have a similar effect,
yes.
And you're absolutely right. But other Loretta, I'm conscious of this being useful for people. So we can take hormones and we can take them topically, we can take them internally, we can you know have them transdermally, we can do all that. That's going to help. But there are other things that we don't hear enough about. Things like lots of women perimenopausally, because of things like vaginal dryness, they need to try lubes, they need to try different positions, and they need to be open. To, you know, it's not just Friday night after the late kind of a thing. You know, it's you need to
have a conversation
and maybe a little bit of an experiment.
Yeah. And communicate. Have a conversation.
I can say, Ciara, that during my 40s, I suffered, and this is before I knew anything about perimenopause, as I said, and I suffered a lot with UTIs, and I was on antibiotics, and I could not get to the bottom of it. I also suffered with what I would, well, sort of the incontinence that they refer to as kind of, you know, when you cough, laugh or sneeze.
Yeah, stress
incontinence.
Yeah, stress incontinence, and then having to get up maybe to go to the loo in the night, which I never did. And I just put all those down to, you know, bad luck on the UTI front, just a run of bad luck. On the incontinence, oh, that must be getting old. I had two children, that must be getting old. So I dismissed everything, you know what I mean? And nobody could join those dots for me, and I couldn't join them myself. And so when I look back now, I wished I'd known about, so there's a product, say, that's they're local estrogens and they're pessaries that you can insert vaginally. Yeah. And they're local estrogens, so they only treat the local area and they don't have any systemic effect at all. I wish I'd known about those. Yeah. Oh, my God. I started on those and the differences it has made.
Yeah.
Vaginal dryness is one of the things that continues to get worse as you age. Some of the other things, you know, the hot flushes can reverse and the brain fog and different elements, the anxiety can go. But vaginal dryness continues throughout a woman's life. So a lot of older women in their 60s, 70s would still complain about that.
Yeah.
And women tell us that they want to have a sex life in that age and that this is something that the vaginal dryness causes pain, it causes UTIs. The incontinence can be an issue for women. And you can also get pelvic floor treatment for some of this.
Yes.
So we have a women's health physio who focuses particularly on pelvic floor.
There are machines use to improve your pelvic floor. There's surgery for women who have extreme levels of this.
That's right.
But I'm going to just put this out there because I think it's important. You're quite right about the vaginal dryness continuing to get worse. The topical estrogens that you use internally, they do help with the dryness, but they also help with, we're talking about the atrophy, and for people don't know what atrophy is, it's sort of a wasting of the tissue, and so the topical estrogen can re-plump the tissues, make it more, you know, plump and full and bouncy and all that again. But at a certain point, that becomes an issue. So things like lubes do become really important, and most of the lubes that are available in places like your local chemist tend to be water-based or silicone-based, and they can be kind of still not enough for menopausal women. They may need oil-based, but also sometimes mixing lubes, a little bit of oil, a little bit of water, you get a little bit of an emulsion, slidey, all that kind of business. That can help. But also, and I just think these things need to be said, people sometimes move, and I know because I've had the conversation with women from things like penetrative vaginal sex to anal sex and to other forms of sexual practices, oral sex, non-penetrative ways of climaxing that are different, because they don't want to give up on sex, but they may have to become a little bit creative, and that's okay. That's all allowable. We have it in our head that sex is penetrative, vaginal, missionary sex, and it's not. And in fact,
For women, sorry to cut across you, Ciara, sorry.
Positionally, women, when they are having issues vaginally, are often better off in the on-top position where they can control the degree of penetration so that if it is painful or whatever, they're kind of in charge. And I think those things, I think we need to be that expressive personally about all this stuff, because some women don't know any of this. And I think those things need to be said, but perhaps I'm very blunt, am I? I don't know.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I would say for women, sex is far more than what happens in the bedroom, if that's where you want
to go. Most women don't
go.
Even climax with penetrative
vaginal
sex.
No, they absolutely don't.
So we need to bear in mind that's not necessarily the be-all and end-all, and it doesn't mean if that's not on the table anymore in the way it perhaps once was, that's the end of sex.
Yeah, sex, I think, for a woman begins at the start of the day. You know, it literally does.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, well, it's a build-up, you know. So it's not just the act, it's everything that comes before the act as well, I think, for most women. You know, so it is it's the intimacy, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I think is really important. And I think it's an awful pity that when, if sex becomes an issue for a couple for a woman, that it's painful, that the intimacy is left go as
I'm
well.
I'm really glad you say that, because a lot of women would say that what they want is intimacy, but it's leading only to one form of sex. That's uncomfortable, so they're not happy with that, and they lose other bits of it as well. And that actually damages your relationship sometimes,
absolutely,
your marriage, your partnership and all that kind of stuff. If someone was to come to somewhere like the Menopause Hub, Loretta, with issues all around sex, I presume nowadays we are at the point where it's A-OK for them to come in and say, look, this is my issue. What I'm struggling with is the fact that myself and my partner aren't, I suppose, having a very satisfactory intimate relationship anymore. What do we do? I mean, these things are things that professionals have heard before, isn't it? Because lots of people are embarrassed to say those things to somebody.
100%. And when I say we have this symptom checker, and if we give that to women and ask them to fill that in advance of coming. So there's 40 different symptoms, and some of them include those genitourinary ones we're talking about, which can impact on the sex life. And if we didn't bring that up, some women wouldn't bring it up at all. They wouldn't mention it. And if you'd say any vaginal dryness, eventually it'd be at the end of the conversation. So what we try to do is we ask women to fill that in. We ask them then to rate them as mild, moderate, severe. And then we also ask them, what's their top five things that they would like to go away and have sort of fixed first? Our doctors would be having those conversations with women. And they can be referred on for further, you know, so the pelvic physio or to somebody in the urology or whatever. So there's lots of other places that women can go. But I do hear from women more and more that they are saying, look, I want to have a sex life and I've had a great sex life and I want it back. And I want to have my husband back and I want the intimacy and everything. And they're prepared to investigate this. Good. And as you said there, there are other things over the counter that are available in pharmacies as well that can help. There's a vaginal moisturizer that you apply a couple of times a week, and that works in between, and that's called Regel. There's a product called Silk, S-Y-L-K, I think, is that how you spell it? And then there's another one called Yes. These are oil-based as well as
and oil-based does make a difference, because yes. I know I've said to women, are you using lube? And they say things like, yes, I went and I got some KY jelly. And I think, oh my God, it's like having a smear test. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing sexy about KY jelly. It's very functional in a clinical setting, lads, but there is warm to touch lubes and oil-based lubes and all kinds of things that are much, much better. To move briefly away from sex, Fiona, other issues that women have around the menopause are things like, and we've seen cases being taken now in the UK around kind of constructive dismissal. The workplace can become a challenge for women, can't it, in terms of menopause, because of the symptoms, and maybe even to do with a little bit of brain fog or whatever, that they may be trying to hide, in fact, from their employers or their colleagues even, and things like that. Talk to me a little bit about women managing that scenario.
It's huge. I think there's something like about 1 in 10 women actually end up leaving work because they're going through the menopause. I mean, and that's such a huge loss to the workforce, particularly because in Chinese medicine, the way menopause is viewed is it's called the woman's second spring, because our creative energy is very intimately connected to our reproductive energy. So when our reproductive energy has come to an end, in other words, we've gone into our infertile years, that energy is all redirected into our creativity. So I think you see so many women now that really bloom and come into their own when they go through their menopause and when they're through their menopausal years. So I think it's just such an awful thing that the workplace would be deprived of that.
It's also madness to have women maybe retiring almost at 50-odd, you know, at 50 years of age, when they have so much more potential and so much more to offer, and probably so much more need for the financial sort of end of things to be okay for them. So that's a really bad impact on people's lives, because we know that people actually, their cognitive function improves the later that they work in their lives, and also their financial security improves the later they work in their lives. So retiring at 50 is not necessarily a good thing for people.
No, absolutely not. I think we all, you know, one of our big things is we all need to be needed, don't we? And we all need to have a purpose. And that's what keeps us going. And as you said, both cognitive function, when we have a purpose and when we have a project, then, you know, it keeps us healthy. It keeps us young.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just like you said, for people to retire at 50, it's a non-runner as far as chief staff would mean. I'd be gone now. That doesn't sit well with me. I have no intention of retiring. That's why it's so important that women are educated. It's so important that they're treated so that you do come back to yourself and that you do re-find yourself. And I think, again, it's a situation that sometimes the transition and the effects are so insidious and are so subtle. We're great stalwarts. We put up with an awful lot. So we too tend to kind of say,
other people,
that's it.
And we put our own needs second.
Yeah. And so a lot of women are well on their way to menopause before it actually twigs with them. Actually, I can't do this anymore. But at that stage, they're way below par at that stage already. But when they find it, and as you said, it's literally they come back and they go, my God, I found myself again. I'm back.
Yeah. One of the other things that we've only touched on, and I think it is a massive issue within menopause, Loretta, is mood. I mean, we've mentioned anxiety, we've mentioned a little bit of mood swings, but I know that on numerous occasions as a GP, women would present to me chiefly with mood issues, and they would say, you know, I think, some of them would say, I think I'm going mad. You know, my mood is all over the place. I'm flying off the handle. I'm crying. I don't remember. And they will sort of identify it as hormonal, and they'll kind of go, I don't remember feeling like this except for maybe when I was pregnant, or it was like PMT, but all the time. And mood issues can be extremely challenging for women in the menopause. They can be very, what we would call, it's a medical term, labile. But basically they're up, they're down, they're all over the place. And that can be an enormous challenge when you have been used to being, you know, capable, confident. It completely knocks you off your stride when your mood seems to change and it's not necessarily under your full control.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the biggest two things we hear from women is, I think I'm going mad.
Yeah.
And the other one is, I want my old self back.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine that menopause is like puberty in reverse, all that you see from a teenager, you're kind of getting at the other end when you expect life to be calm, free sailing, to have it under control. So, yeah, a lot of women would present with that, you know, sort of highly irritable. They would be weepy, crying, bursts of anger. Women have said to us particularly that if they have young children, so they've had children maybe late, that they find that they're, you know, maybe screaming at the children, and they remind themselves of their own mothers. And although they didn't really know what was happening to their own mothers, they realise now that this is probably menopause, and they don't want their children to have the same experience of their mother as they had of their own mothers.
And their mothers may not have had any support through menopause because back in the whenevers, the 70s or the 80s or whatever, that menopausal women's now mothers were young mothers during, there was no support.
Yes.
In fact, I don't know if it was ever talked about. The change was what it was called.
Exactly.
Called anything. Okay.
So they would present with those kind of symptoms. They would also have had some people would have anxiety for the first time accompanied with this mood change. They would have a kind of a feeling what they describe as not depression, but if you mention mood, sometimes the solution can be antidepressants, but can be the first line solution can be by some doctors antidepressants, which wouldn't be correct. But what they also, you know, are saying is that it's just that they're all over the place, and they were in control and they were able to manage the children, the workplace, if they're working outside the home, their parents, maybe the elderly parents and so on. And they had it all kind of sussed, and now everything is out of whack and they find they can't cope with a lot of things that they once were able to cope with. And it's a very frightening position for women to be in. And if you're in the workplace, the last thing you want to be seen is a teary, emotional woman when you're maybe leading a team or, you know, at a very senior level, you know?
Yeah. There's an awful lot in what you've just said there. I think that's very impactful. We're coming near the end of the talk. And if you have joined us, thank you very much. And we're delighted that you have. We are talking about menopause and why it matters with News Talk and indeed MenoActive by Revive Active, who are supporting women during and after the menopause. Fiona, just lastly, for people who are listening and going, they're talking about me. And maybe I haven't, as that person, taken any steps yet. Is the easiest thing, first of all, to go maybe get the supplements and then go and see the doctor? Or what did you do the other way around? Or what would you say?
Obviously, if you'd have to be mindful of the fact if you're taking any other sort of medication or if you've any other underlying health condition, you should always consult your doctor before you'd go and take a supplement. So I'd say that first. If you have none of that, if you're not on any other medication, if you've no underlying health conditions, you could certainly, I think, give the
There's no
the
real contraindication to the products, though. They're most of the menopausal sort of alternative treatments, which women do like to take, are very well tolerated and wouldn't have any real major side effects.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, every ingredient that's in there is very safe to take, you know, and has been very well researched. And I suppose what you're looking for in a product is you're looking for it to be, you know, the right ingredients and at the right concentration and at the most biologically active. And I'd have to say, I think MenoActive, we've hit all of those three things. So I think it's probably the most, as far as we're concerned, the most comprehensive supplement that is available at the moment on the market for menopause to support women.
And widely available in pharmacies, health food shops, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and online, reviveactive.com,
Very good. And Loretta, then someone has done that, right? And maybe they've even done that. And maybe they've even gone to the GP and they still aren't right. There are now, I know that the Menopause Hub is based in Dublin, but there are specialised clinics around the country because I suppose the demand is there and women can go and seek it. Do they need to be referred or can they, I suppose, self-refer to clinics?
Most of them that I'm aware of are self-referral. Our clinic is self-referral. And I would just say that women are there's a lot of confusion around blood tests. And I just wanted to cover that. Women say, do I need a blood test to determine if I'm menopausal, perimenopausal, whatever. So the rules or the protocol that's in our clinic is that, and this is in line with the British Menopause Society and the International NICE guidelines, is that once you're over the age of 45, you don't need a blood test to determine determine your status in terms of menopause. But if you're under the age of 45 and you haven't had an obvious thing like, surgical menopause or something to do with medication, cancer treatment, etc., and that you think you're maybe early menopause, you would need blood tests, the hormonal profiling, to help with that. And then sometimes if women aren't responding well to some of the treatment or responding as well as we would have expected to some of the hormonal treatment, the doctors may request some hormonal blood tests to check absorbency and things like that. So I would think that there are more services opening up. We're actually opening up on the north side. We're about to open a clinic in Cork as well. And so we will be expanding. Plus, our services are online. So you can do.
I was about to say going global, but what I actually meant was national, which is a good thing.
Watch this space. Some kind of menopausal brain fog there.
I think that's really good. And I'm really glad you mentioned the blood test, because sometimes patients used to come to me and they'd say, I'm having all these symptoms. And I go, oh, the menopause. And they go, no, I saw a different doctor and they did a blood test and they told me I'm not in the menopause. And I used to say, the blood test doesn't actually matter, because here's the thing, it doesn't always reflect the reality that you're living with. These are menopausal symptoms, you know, you're 49 and a half or whatever it is. I don't think the fact that your blood test isn't ticking the right box for somebody, it makes any odds whatsoever. Look, can I say a sincere thank you to both of you? There's an enormous amount of information there and an enormous amount of food for thought. And I suspect very much you've made a lot of people feel a lot better, because you've given hope and the idea that you can come back to yourself, and indeed that people are not going mad, because that was something, Loretta, when you said, I used to hear that all the time, I think I'm going mad. No, you're not going mad, it's called the menopause. Thank you both very much for joining us today at News Talk to talk about why menopause matters with MenoActive by Revive Active. It's quite a mouthful, but by Revive Active. But I am delighted, Dr. Fiona Barry and Loretta Dignan of the Menopause Hub, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to try and talk more about menopause, not just a News Talk. I think in society this is becoming an issue. I love the fact that women, particularly slightly older women who maybe were always a little bit invisible and a little bit marginalised and maybe didn't have their voices heard anymore because they weren't 25 and in hot pants or whatever, although I still have a pair of hot pants in the cupboard. But anyway, I'm delighted that this conversation is happening. Thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you found it as helpful as I did. I'm Dr. Ciara Kelly. I present News Talk Breakfast, and I hope today at News Talk we have told you why menopause matters.